Continuing the journey, just remind you of some core things that I'll mention each time, that the heart of discipleship is obedience to Christ, that the motivation for discipleship is a vision of Christ and his kingdom. It is for the love of Jesus that we follow him, and that part of God's work in us by the Holy Spirit is to make us like Christ. It's not all meant to wait till the last day when we see him as he is and are like him. So we can trust God the Spirit is as much at work in the shaping of new disciples to be Christ-like disciples as is ahead of the church as the missionary God in the planting of fresh expressions in the first place. And just one other quotation around discipleship. This is Rowan Williams. If you said to a modern student or a prospective student that the essence of being a student was to hang on your teacher's every word, to follow his or her steps, to sleep outside their door in case you missed any pearls of wisdom falling from their lips, to watch how they conduct themselves at the table, how they conduct themselves in the street, you might not get a very warm welcome. But in the ancient world, it was rather more like that. To be a student, a disciple of a teacher, was to commit yourself to living in the same atmosphere and breathing the same air. There was nothing intermittent about it. Remember, it's discipleship is to be with Jesus in order to learn how to be like him. And when I first read that quote from Rowan, it made new sense of Jesus' words, abide in me. You know, live in me, I am your environment, make me your home, every dimension of your life rooted in me. So everything we're going to talk about this morning is really about the presence of Jesus and living in the presence of Jesus and how people may encounter and grow in the presence of Jesus. And my menu about remaining missional, that fresh expressions are not just brought into being through incarnational mission and then settle into being just pastoral communities. About transforming worship, because although we propose to you that just starting with a worship service that you think is appropriate to people with whom you have not yet formed relationship is not the best thing to do, is absolutely clear that any expression of church is a worshiping community. So we need to talk about worship and sacraments, and to talk about staging posts that people can develop, as it were, from stage to stage along the way. So first of all, remaining missional. There's no need in a fresh expression for all to move at the same pace. You can't do that if it remains missional. You have people who have been coming to faith over a period of years. People are at the earliest stages of contact with you and have begun to be part of the community and so on. So you need to provide regular opportunities for people to go deeper, but you need to create a culture where each is encouraged to move as they're able. You are not contrasting one with another. And the great significance is, are people taking steps nearer to Jesus or further away from him, rather than how far they've gone, how fast they've gone, or anything like that? And to do that, you must maintain the missional focus. Here's one of my colleagues, Ben, and his little boy. Ben is on the panel that interviews potential pioneer ministers. Ben is now ordained and the Fresh Expressions advisor for the Diocese of Manchester. But as a church army evangelist, he was sent into the central bit of Manchester that the IRA had blown up. And a whole load of stores and so forth were demolished. and a whole load of single occupancy flats for young adults were built right in the heart of Manchester. And no local church had any capacity to engage with them. And he was literally sent in as the pioneer evangelist with his wife to see what he could do. And he planted a church called Sanctus One, which is now an Anglican Methodist one. I ought to say, incidentally, that Fresh Expressions UK was Anglican Methodist from day one and is now Anglican Methodist United Reformed Congregational and about to become Church of Scotland and Salvationist. And I got an email this morning saying who I continue the conversation with the Baptists with. We think this is an ecumenical gift by definition and not just something that improves it. We think that this is the easiest ecumenism on the road because it's people who all need to learn new things, learning them together, and everybody getting the benefit from everybody else's experience and learning. That wasn't in the script, but I meant to say it, and just so that it's off my chest. Now, back to Manchester. And Ben, and this little interview I've not got time to play you, says, the issue became all sorts of young adults were coming to faith and growing in faith. And he had been sent in there as a church planting missionary, and now suddenly he was the pastor of a community with all sorts of needs. And what he had to work out was, a missional church is a pastoral church, but a missional church is not a church that allows all its energies to be soaked up by pastoral care, so it no longer is engaged in the mission that it was called to. And you have to learn that the hard way, I think. I'm quite clear that churches, whether they be Fresh Expressions, Inherited, or anything else you can think of, always seem to have a few people who will demand all the time you've got and not be satisfied. And there has to be a certain clear determination. We will see people are cared for, but we will not be sucked into bottomless need. We will invest in those with the capacity to become the leaders of others, and we will all the time keep the focus on mission. Now, to do that, there's a little bit of rather horrible old-style church growth jargon I want to use, and I will seem much more Anglican for the rest of the morning. So, Fresh Expressions need in the jargon to be modal and sodal. Well, what on earth does that mean? Back in the 70s, there was a paper written called The Two Structures of God's Redemptive Mission, which basically says, in the New Testament, in the history of the church comes in two forms, and they're both church. It comes in the local church, which, if you like, is open and welcoming to all, and no conditions are put on your becoming part of it, except it is expected that you are seeking to be a follower of Jesus. But the second form of church was the apostolic team. Going to the places where the church was not, planting new communities and so on. Now, we sometimes divide that up as church and parachurch. I don't believe parachurch exists. I just think the Church of Jesus Christ exists in various appropriate forms to God's call. And that the difference between the modal, which is the general, or whosoever will may come, and the sodal, which is the community with the calling, is that you make a second decision when you join the second one. You become part of the ministry that the community is called to, and not just part of the ministry. And George Lings of the UK Church Army has written a really helpful, up-to-date paper about that, The web address for that is, you'll find on the download. And George talks about the first is where all age groups of local Christians gather. The second was made of experienced workers who made a characteristic second decision beyond commitment to the first form of church. And then at Fuller Seminary, Peter Wagner wrote that both are part of God's total plan for the church in mission. However, if the mission is to be fulfilled, the two must relate to one another in a dynamic way, a symbiotic relationship. It's possibly said for a local church to be a great deal like a sodality, And to the degree that it tends that way, it enjoys a higher growth potential. And now I don't buy into all of previous decades' church growth language, but what he is saying is Christian communities in this context that take mission seriously are communities that you join and you are called into their mission, and not just joined to be part of the pastoral community. And you therefore care for people as you are on the move in mission, rather than all your energy is soaked up just caring for people. And I'm also convinced that those who come with a lot of need and find sufficient strength to help to begin to meet the others in the name of Jesus actually make considerable pastoral progress themselves, rather than if they were just receiving and receiving all the time. So that's George. That's a short version of the address. It's on the download. But what it means is when you are drawn into a fresh expression, you join the community. Much, much more interested, I repeat, in communities of disciples than in new style events people attend. But you join a community which is on the move, and you join a community which serves others as part of its DNA. And that helps you maintain the balance between the pastoral and the missional. Otherwise, you have innovative ways to form a new community that then can so easily settle to be a community whose energies are just taken up with itself. So that's the only bit of church growth jargon you're going to get from me, but we do find that distinction helpful. Some research is going on in the Church of England at the moment into, in the end, something like 15 dioceses, detailed research on fresh expressions. It will tell you, for instance, that in the diocese of Liverpool and Canterbury, which are vastly different from one another, something like between 10.5% and 11.5% of all church attendance in those dioceses is now in fresh expressions. One is much more liberal Catholic, one is much more low church, partly evangelical, one is much more urban, one is much more nice villages, and this... Well, I mustn't go into all the stats or I'll get off of course, but one piece of research is done is how is disciple making consciously attended to in this range of, across the two dioceses, 120, 130 fresh expressions of church. Four things come out loud and clear, two of which I will deal with this morning and two of which this evening. One-to-one investment in people's growth as disciples, the use of appropriate courses to introduce those who know little about the Christian faith to the Christian faith, a particular use of small groups, and drawing people at an early stage into serving teams, either for the life of the fresh expression or as often and even better as part of the ministry of the fresh expression to serve others. So just to pick up one-to-one, I need to say this to you. I don't think you make disciples a great deal through sermons, though a very high view of the ministry of the word. I don't actually think that going to church is necessary a great way to grow in great depth as a disciple of Jesus if some certain other things aren't in place. I don't believe that Christians go to church. I believe that they are church, and they're sometimes church gathered and church scattered. But just coming to a church attendance with a service with no thought about it, that it is important but not enough. Not even convinced that being in some sort of fellowship group is a great gain for discipleship, though I will talk about the small groups that are. I don't think there's any way you can avoid prayerfully discerning who one-to-one over time you will invest your life in that they grow as a disciple of Jesus. I just don't think that one is escapable. Why? Because that's the way Jesus did it. Yes, he taught the crowds. Yes, he had various levels of discipleship. But Luke tells us it was after a night of prayer. He came down and he identified 12 people in whom he would invest his life for 3 years. And Matthew tells us that that risen from the dead, the Lord, before his ascension, says to the 11 of them that remain, "As I have made you disciples, now go and make disciples." So Alan Hirsch, the founding of the whole Christian community, was initiated through simple acts of Jesus investing his life and embedding his teachings in his followers and developing them into authentic disciples. We are called to do the same. It's not favoritism. It is prayerful discernment over time before God. Whom will we meet with? Who will we say, why don't we have breakfast together once a week and talk about what this Christian faith means? There is a one-to-one element that I think is unavoidable in the palette of things you need to know for disciple-making. And to illustrate why that might be necessary, we'll have a little film about church being planted in a franchise coffee shop in the east of England.
In Woodbridge, there's quite a few people that actually attend church, round about 10% of those in Woodbridge do actually go to a traditional church. But as a church, as St John's Church Woodbridge, we've felt like we actually need to be more where people actually are, because there's 90% of people that actually don't attend church. And we wanted to know the reasons why that is. What is their faith? Where does their faith come from? And where is it going? The lounge at Costa is in a very early stage. We've been going for about 2 or 3 years, which I think is actually still quite an early stage in any person's life. When you're three, you're still gaining the balance of walking. So the lounge at the moment is currently very, very young, and we're still in that listening stage at the moment. We still haven't found a consistent team or a consistent way of experimenting with church and trying to do church in a way that people can relate to and people can come and engage with. So we're still very, very early on in the life of the lounge at Costa.
So John, why do you write songs?
Building community is such an important and essential part of developing and exploring a fresh expression of church. So we have a consistent time that we meet up once a month on a Sunday, normally the second Sunday of every month, and we try and experiment with live music, poetry. We also have a question time when people can ask any question they want about God, the universe, life. I really believe that community has been developed, and we've seen that, especially within those that are actually working in the coffee shop. And I believe once we've accomplished that, once we've developed those relationships and built that trust and bond, I believe that the lounge at Costa can develop and grow, and we'll just see so many people coming to know Jesus Christ.
Everybody comes to Costa. It's one of the main meeting places in the town, so bringing the church out of the four walls of the church building into one of the main meeting places into the town, where it's a focus for cross-section of members of the community, I think is great.
I think the event at Costa has brought me back to church, because I did spend a spell away from church. It's because it's very informal. I know that's attracted me, you know, definitely brought me back to church, and that's a good thing.
Often people my age who haven't been brought up going to church, they don't like to come into an environment where the seats are all, you're all facing the front and you're confined. Here you can just come, grab a coffee, listen to some music, hear a talk or whatever, and it's much more accessible.
Building community outside the gathering that we've established there on a monthly basis, that has started to develop. And one of my passions is going on adventures. So we've started this 5 a.m. adventure for those that have to rush off to London. People tend to commute from Woodbridge to London for their work. So we've tried to beginning to establish and birth a new type of fresh expression of church. And this happens at 5 a.m. in the morning. Some people are actually asleep. I'm awake at those times. And we go on an adventure, whether that's running or cross country, biking, canoeing. And then we end up at Costa, where we met them to discuss the day, to also maybe pray for the day, and also look at Psalms and maybe some Proverbs as well, because that tends to really relate to them rather than going into a whole deep Bible study. So that's literally just happening. That's new, fresh off the shelf. And I'm really hoping to see that develop and grow. And if I'm honest, I think those that actually do turn up to the lounge, I think about 60% are actually Christians. But that still gives us 40% of those that don't know Christ to actually speak to. So it's a really tough one. And I think as a team, it's really difficult to sort of have that balance and turn people away. But also, we don't know where those Christians are on their journey. They could be asking a lot more questions than we actually might know on a normal Sunday service. So striking the balance is really difficult. Discipleship is essential within any Christian, within their journey, getting to know Christ and being with Christ and being with other Christians. So discipleship is a key part, and we're experimenting with different things. Sometimes we have question time in our monthly events, where people can come with any questions that they want to ask about God and faith. We try and bring in people that are actually in the workplace and Christians to answer those questions. So we've tried to do that. But again, it's on a monthly basis, and we don't have that consistency with the people we're trying to disciple. So on our 5 a.m. adventures, we're trying to build that in subtly over the days, over the weekly period, rather than trying to do it on a monthly, because I don't think we can do it on a monthly, and that's something that we're trying to think about. And do we develop it? Does the lounge on a Sunday evening become a weekly thing, so we can build that consistency, build the relationships, build the servant attitude, and out of that community comes the questions. And we really believe at the lounge in organic growth. It's got to start where people are. We can't force it on them. We can't bring our acoustic guitars. We can't bring the hymns. We can't bring the Matt Redman songs. As much as we love those things, we've got to start where people are. And then we walk with them on that journey.
Shortly after I became a Christian.
Love and care is a quality that all churches should have. In terms of people that we meet on a monthly basis, but also on the 5 a.m. adventures, I really believe, and I can see that happening, the love and the community building within those relationships, because everyone needs God, everyone wants to worship God. They worship other things, and we really need to point them in that direction. So I think the love and the attitudes to a servant heart are slowly building, and I think that's through the team, and hopefully building a consistent team that will actually be able to relate to the people at Costa and also to the staff at Costa as well.
Now, we regularly use that clip just to introduce the idea of a fresh expression and a fresh expression on neutral territory and things like that. But will you note the issue of discipleship, how it concerns him, and that the key thing he's doing is identifying those who weekly, not monthly, he will meet with. You don't have to do it, all of you, at 5 a.m. I will give you an Episcopal dispensation from being too legalistic about that. But meeting people regularly at a time and in a way, and that is appropriate, and helping them towards Christ into a deeper, consistent following of Christ, it is a there is no easy version of disciple making that does not involve some work like that. But then what about worship? Michael Vasey, who was one of the primary architects of the Church of England's Common Worship Liturgy, wrote that in much contemporary evangelism, there's no mechanism or context in which the liturgical formation of the individual can take place. It's as though we have split evangelism from worship, apart from certain styles. And what he's pointing to is the fact that worship to Almighty God is formational for those who worship Him. So fresh expressions are not nervous about worship. They're nervous about automatically starting with worship before you know the people you are actually shaping the worship for. It's also vital, anyone who is introduced to something new has to learn some technical vocabulary. So we have to avoid unnecessary spiritual jargon. But there is a language of the faith that we're going to introduce people to, and a consistent participation in Christian worship at the right stage is going to be part of that setting. And worship is powerful. American Mennonite friend of ours, Alan Kreider, in one of his books, reminded people that about up to the time of Constantine, unbelievers did not attend Christian worship because it wasn't safe for the Christians. But he says the worship to which pagans were denied admission was all important in the spread of the church because its rites and practices made differences in the lives and communities of the worshippers. It performed the function of reforming those pagans who joined the church into Christians, distinctive people who lived in a way that was recognizably in the tradition of Jesus. So that's what the worship of a fresh expression is to achieve. It is not actually what the worship of a fresh expression is for. My near neighbor in Kent, Professor Robin Gill, the principal object of liturgy is to worship God. It is Godward. That's why we do it. And it's formational, it's transforming power, is the grace of God in overflow. We don't worship God for what we get. We worship God because God is glorious. We worship God because God has been revealed in Jesus and we have been captivated by Him. But when we worship God, the Spirit of God works in transformation. The values that are generated in the process are the consequence of worship and not its object. But so the challenge for fresh expressions is not should there be worship, but how should the worship be appropriate to the context? I want to share with you, I think, the most challenging quotation in the writings of Leslie Newbegin I've ever met. I love Newbegin. He's one of my great heroes. And I read a paper that isn't in the lots of the published collections, and this brought me up short. The character of the local church will not be determined primarily by the character, tastes, and dispositions of its members. Now, I stopped there, and I thought, now, hang on a minute. 8 years of a jobbing bishop going round the Diocese of Canterbury, I think just about every local church I went to minister in was shaped by the character, tastes, and dispositions, etc., of its members. That's why a lot of other people found it so difficult to get in. But and of course, he means it's not meant to be, but by those of the society in which it and for which it lives, seen in the light of God's redemptive purpose revealed in Jesus Christ for all. In other words, what should be the final decider on the culture and style and approach of the worship is what God intends through Jesus for that context. It's not society sets the culture instead of church taste sets the culture. It's what God has done in Christ and intends for that culture, that context that sets the tone. So there's going to be a forward look, there's going to be something prophetic, there's going to be something of an anticipation of what God intends if all His purposes in Christ are worked out in this community, this network, this place, which means that the question of how worship is framed and shaped has a fundamental missional question. And it's engaging with that seriously in diverse contexts. So we are in the business of reimagining worship, and that creates a problem. This is Kim, one of our pioneer ministers, writing very honestly. This brings us to the thorny issue. For the Church of England is very dependent upon its liturgy and its use of authorized texts for worship, believing that these shape us into God's people as we say the words together and give us our unity. That is correct. However, in her fresh expression, we find many of these things are words we can't say as a community, for they don't reflect our experience of life or of God. They're not our words. Culturally, they've not come out of our hearts, our streets, or our struggles, and they can't easily come out of our mouths. Now, she's profoundly aware of that as a tension. What happens in this situation is that many fresh expressions or new forms of church don't use the authorized texts and forms of worship, but creatively frame their own liturgy, empowering people who use indigenous language and expression to find their own authentic voice in lament and worship. Now, she's caught on to two vital things. What is the balance between unity and diversity? What is the balance between the local and the shared? And the bit of me that leads Fresh Expressions is profoundly with her issue about the local, and the bit of me that's a bishop in the Church of God is profoundly aware that the local can't just frame the whole thing. And therefore, practitioners in Fresh Expressions need to live creatively in that tension. They need to be part of a two-way dialogue between tradition and context. But actually, for Anglicans here, there are good Anglican resources saying Kim is right and we must pay attention, but we can pay attention without, if you like, selling our birthright or our distinctiveness. A report called the York Report, which is why there's no author title on the slide, an international consultation of the Anglican Communion on worship and culture, wrote this: "There must be a willingness in worship to listen to culture, to incorporate what is good and to challenge what is alien to the truth of God. It has to make contact with the deep feelings of people." Kim was really saying these words don't come from our hearts. They somehow don't touch who we are and where they are. It can only be achieved through an openness to innovation and experimentation, an encouragement of local creativity, and a readiness to reflect critically at each stage of the process, a process which is in principle never ending. And then a little later in the report, they give the warning about what happens if you don't do it. A lack of enculturation has fostered both the cultural alienation of some Christians, Kim's saying, these aren't our words, and an over-ready willingness of others to live in two cultures, one of their religion and the other of their everyday life. That I find really helpful. Now, I can't give you an easy fix-it kit about how you do that. I will recommend, on the reading list, there's a book by Bishop Mary Gray Reeves from the States, and Bishop Michael Perham, who's a former chair of the Liturgical Commission in the Church of England, called The Hospitality of God. And they've gone to visit Fresh Expressions where there has been real liturgical creativity. And it's a book full of respect for the liturgical seriousness of those who have brought their tradition with them and then crafted worship that is both true to their tradition but really can come out of the mouths of the people they are dealing with. We are, I think, early on the stage in the Fresh Expressions movement, including the UK, of learning the skills of liturgical enculturation. True to the tradition that carries us, but shaping it locally. Now, broadly speaking, in the Church of England, by the way, that's legal. You'd think it wasn't, but our common worship liturgies give much more emphasis to the shape, flow, and deep structure of a rite, a service of the word, a Eucharist, than they do to the exact words, and everybody's saying the same thing. They emphasize a common core, that we guard particularly the words we say over bread and wine. We guard particularly the vows that people make when they're baptized. We share the prayer the Lord taught us, and so on. And that there's certain things always in the common core that are for now. They touch the moment, but they won't be in the common core forever. We provide loads of seasonal and contextual resources. And then the canon permits local experiment when what is provided does not engage with the context. So I think there's a good Anglican way to have both freedom and accountability in this. But please hear Kim's words. We find it hard with the formal liturgies our church gives us to find words to pray that comes from our hearts and engage with our context. And she's saying that as an ordained minister. She's not saying that as someone who does not want to be responsibly part of her church. So creative worship will reform tradition. A fresh expression is in many ways a performance or improvisation of the scriptures and the faith once delivered to the saints, that is for the context to which Jesus has sent the team who is planting it. With worship being created contextually, but informed by tradition. And just one tip. God is not like Pharaoh. God doesn't say, make bricks and find your own straw. When God, by his Spirit, plants church, he gives gifts. So don't angst about the gifts you haven't got with the bunch of people that are gathering around you. Find the way to draw on the gifts and the potential of those that you are working with and let God surprise you. There's a journey of discovery in this. So keep it missional, curating worship, and finally staging posts. People able to go from step to step in their growth of discipleship. Let me take you to Sorted. Sorted is a fresh expression of church in the Diocese of Bradford. We're not going to have a film. I'm just going to tell you a tiny little bit about it. It has a bishop's mission order, which legally authorizes it with full legal status as the equivalent of a parish in the diocese. And it began with contact work by a church army evangelist on skate parks with kids in a really needy area. Out of that has come now, I think, three Sorted congregations. Sorted develops like this. You probably encounter Sorted by people meeting you either in the skate park or as a result of all this contact work in your school. You have the opportunity to get drawn into the wider Sorted community by being invited to come into a weekly club night where, no one throws Bible bombs at you, but the Christian environment is clear and conversations can take place. If you want to know more, you can then come to the praise service with scripture teaching, with a teenage worship band, and you are being drawn into a clear, contextually appropriate act of Christian worship, also weekly. If you become really serious about going on in discipleship, you are baptized, you renew your vows of baptism made when you're an infant, you are invited into a peer-led discipleship group where teenage leaders who know Jesus a little bit better help you on. Now, the reason that means in Sorted, the fresh expression could have you involved three times a week. The leaders are quite clear. The home backgrounds these young people come from are so totally dysfunctional and so shaping of them that a very powerful countercultural experience that is appropriate to them has to be put in place. It can be utterly right to do messy church once a month, because if you make it more often, the families you most want to draw in, who are, over busy, will drop off the edge. It can be equally right to be building it up to three times a week, because that's the only way real transformation of lives is going to happen in a broken community like that. Or if you come to Moot, right in the middle of the City of London in the banking and office district, a new monastic community, You meet them through what they call radical hospitality, mission and evangelism. It might be their recently opened arts cafe. It might be that you decide to come to their weekly offering of a half hour of guided Christian meditation and stillness designed with a poster called Stressed Out in the City. And then they'll take you to the pub. Talk to you. And if you want then to become part of the community, recognizing that there'll be a lot of belonging before believing, you can be drawn into the community, its social life, and its worship. But at the heart of the community are now something like 60 young adults with a committed shared rule of life. And a new monastic way of life. Stage further, bit deeper, signposts. Many fresh expressions are in practice at the beginning catechumenate communities. They are people on a journey towards Christ. In a culture where probably they will need to belong to that community before deciding if they commit themselves to what that community believes. Many of them in my context know very little. You've had Rachel Jordan, I think, to speak at this conference. Rachel told me she was coming back from the States, or maybe it's from Canada, and it was coming back from the conference. And she sat next to this smart young British lawyer who decided to chat her up. And what do you do, he says. And she thought, as was true then, I'm the Associate Advisor for Mission and Evangelism for the Church of England. Might not take the conversation much further. So she said, oh, I work for the church. Now, this clearly threw him. Church. Oh, Bible in the church. I know one from the Bible. There's one about no room at the inn. So she explained to him, this is a lawyer, that he had a connection to Christmas. And he could rake up one more. There's one about the missing body. Now, if you're going to know two stories from the Bible, that's not bad, but that was it. No? A young traditionalist Anglo-Catholic priest who works in Fresh Expressions was in his church one day, midweek, doing something practical, and in walked this smart, clearly educated young woman. And she says, she looks around in utter astonishment. Now, if you have any church connection, your nostrils and your eyesight would tell you you were in an Anglo-Catholic shrine, right? And she spots the priest and she comes up to him and says, excuse me, sir, what is this building for? He's quick on the uptake and he says, it's about the person you're wearing round your neck, Jesus Christ, who died and rose. And she says, I always wondered who the little man was. Right? Now, you see, if you laugh or groan, you've not been in the real world out there, or at least the one I come from. We are talking about leading people to Jesus, some of whom, in practice, know perfectly nothing. I mean, they know Ned Flanders, or the Vicar of Dibley, or Father Ted, or something like that, but that's about it. But they come from a culture that expects when you join, you participate. So they're not just going to sit still. My colleague Mark Berry, who is our main connection into the Church Mission Society's missionary order, says he and his work comes across three groups of people. There's a few pilgrims, eclectic spiritual seekers. He'll actually tell you there's nowhere near as many of them around as we Christians try and pretend, and that they're not clubbable, they're very individualistic, they're hard work. Then he says there's the seekers, because Mark and his team work regularly in mind, body, and spirit fairs. But he says they're not there seeking the spiritual, they're broken people seeking healing. It's a therapeutic search, and they don't mind where healing comes from, as long as it works. But he says, the great majority, he says, we call the suppressors, not to their face. They have a capacity for the transcendent and to relate to God and to the questions of meaning, but they've never really used it in their life. And so it's not so much suppressed as lying there unused. And somehow that's got to be awakened. And for some of those, it's what Professor Grace Davey calls vicarious religion. We're really glad someone else does it for us. Glad you church people are around. And if you know the writer Anne Morrissey, she says the suppressors need apt liturgy. They need help. She connects to things like, in England, if there's been a really bad road accident, a little shrine appears. And maybe for years afterwards, flowers are laid, and people are using ritual and symbolism to try and express something. It spread like a virus when Princess Diana died, all over the country. Evidence that there is this capacity, but not developed. And Anne says you need empathy with the local story. You need to touch the hearts of these people, know what it feels like to be them. You need to find appropriate symbols in which they can express even their asking of the question, what does it all mean? And you need a skill in connecting that to the narrative of Scripture in appropriate stories. And that begins people on their way. But I used to tell my students at Ridley Hall when they were asked to go in and do assemblies in schools, you can no longer walk into a school and start with, you all know the story about, because they don't. You introduce them to the stories connecting to life. In corporate worship, there needs to be both pattern and creativity. Pattern, so there's a secure context and appropriate repetition. If it, please, 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 don't be so creative it's different every time. Please put a shape on it in which people are secure. Because if you don't, they never know what's coming next. You will find it's remarkably, it seemed great for the first 2 months. And then you found you put a burden on your back to maintain something you can't maintain. And thirdly, you'll find being over-ambitious about the nature of worship is so demanding you don't have any energy left for the people who come to it. So pattern, but creativity, so that this participation, engagement of the imagination, and I'll talk about prophetic counter-images tomorrow. I must be a little quicker now, and I shall skip a couple of slides on teaching. So, in the ministry of the word, you're talking about creating a learning culture. Most of us are trained to be clear about what we want to teach. We pay less attention to how people learn. As multi-sensory as possible. Different people learn better through different senses, participative. And remember someone saying, there aren't any unchallengeable experts in preaching anymore, because they can be sitting listening to your great talk while taking out their smartphone in the pew and checking online somebody has a different view of the passage you're speaking from while you're doing it. And therefore, we have to really trust that the Holy Spirit is the primary teacher of the church and be a lot less controlling than preachers used to be about the management of the context. And good creative worship creates space for a response. People in the diocese in England learn from one-to-one and from appropriate courses. John's doing, I think, a seminar sometime during this conference on courses. I'd just say, please find the right course for your context. Talk to Jackie, who's used both Alpha and One, that requires much less knowledge and is shorter and much more interactive, called Start, which proved much better for some of the older people coming back to active Christian faith on her estate than taking them through the course. So that's a contextual thing. And something about sacramental life. Let's be absolutely clear on this. If there is church, there will be the dominical sacraments. Full stop. This for fresh expressions is not a problem to solve. It's a developmental stage to negotiate, because you've got catechumenate communities often at the beginning. You are laying a path to Jesus, a series of steps along the way in which baptism, renewal of baptismal vows, and confirmation will have a natural place. Because if you've got a catechumenate community, it is probably sacraments of initiation that is the start of sacramental life. So the great day for Sorted was when Bishop David of Bradford baptized 6 of these young people in the river who had never been baptized, while they were watched by their mates and a lot of very bemused sunbathers, and then confirmed them and 7 others by the riverbank to mark their public commitments of faith in Jesus. Great staging post. In Cliftonville near Margate, not far from where we came from, the a church in a very chaotic community had an alpha course in which about 40 people came to faith from all sorts of damaged backgrounds and had the most incredible, I have a very badly made scrappy video of some of the most moving baptisms and testimonies of people. Of course, sacraments of initiation are a vital part of the of a Fresh Expressions life. And here's Bishop Humphrey in a messy church, please note, and he is in the Diocese of Derby, and he has just confirmed in the context of messy church, because that was church for those people. And those of us who officiate go to the context and relate to the context. We don't say, this is real church except for the things that really matter, and for the things that really matter, you go off to formal church and do it like proper Christians. Really important. But baptism is also into Christ's ministry. As members of Christ's body, this was outside the church I used to be the vicar of in York. As Archbishop Centimore on Easter morning baptized. But we are baptized, says Eddie Gibbs, into his mission, equipped by the Spirit to make our distinctive contribution to the totality of the ministry of the church. Baptisms into Christ, into his community, and into his continuing mission to the world through his community. And a church that has remained missional, to go to my first point, will understand that this is not just the marking of the beginning of the Christian life. This is an ordination to ministry, and will teach it appropriately. Finally, a little about the Eucharist. And we need a story. This is Blessed, and my good friend, Father Simon Rundell.
Blessed is a community that came out of youth work in urban Portsmouth. It began as a form of outreach, and as we started to explore the faith with the young people, they discovered that their identity was principally sort of focused around the sacramental life. It's what we as a church were about, and it's how they increasingly identified themselves. And so as we began to explore it, they said to me, Farf, it's all the stuff about bread and wine, isn't it? And they found their life of faith explored through sacramental signs and wonders. So Blessed became almost uniquely a form of expression and a community that was formed around the Mass. We quickly began to understand that actually it was more than just celebrating special forms of worship, but actually was about forming community. So we then sought to really set up Blessed as an alternative ecclesial community. I think you have to work harder when things like Twitter and Facebook and email and texting are used quite extensively. However, we found that in people's busy lives, when their time and their commitment is far more difficult to identify and prescribe, we found that that latency that comes with social networking can actually be our boon. People are waking up each morning to the text messages that are sent via Twitter to them every day, a daily reflection, a word of scripture. It focuses their devotional life. I'd love to be able to say and declare with great confidence that Blessed is a firm, established, rock-solid community that is there for everybody. But I think I'm going to have to admit that like most communities, even established church communities, Blessed is fragile, it's vulnerable, it suffers from both enthusiasm and also great exhaustion and apathy. And so, like with all communities, I think we struggle to find our way forward. That's what keeps us vital. That's what keeps us open and honest and open to God. Because if we become too complacent, then I think we'll cease to be a cutting-edge community that's seeking the will of God.
Relax your body. Open your mind. Engage your spirit. This is the house of God.
when people say, oh yes, Blessed is all right, it's some sort of faux church, it's pretend church, it's not real church, I would challenge them to actually come and share the sacrament with us. Actually, whenever people are gathered together around the Blessed Sacrament, there Christ is present. And coming from our sacramental Anglo-Catholic tradition, we would definitely say that Christ is present in precious blood and Blessed Sacrament. And so, of course, Christ is made real to us at every gathering. And as increasingly as communities have sought to seek out God and seek his will, they've turned increasingly to sign and to symbol and to sacrament. And if that's been a fresh expression of the church, then we've been doing that for 150, 200 years. There are many traditionalists who would look upon certain forms of sacramental fresh expression as some sort of gimmick, some sort of trick, and say that, yes, Mass every day and just keep plodding on with the same rather unimaginative form of expression, really needs to look back to the origin of the Oxford movement. They really need to look at the radical approach that Pusey and Newman and all of the great doyens of the first flourish of Anglo-Catholicism in the late Victorian era, to lift the souls of the working person from the gutter to the glories of God. Those were the original fresh expressions. What we are doing is taking that same Eucharistic life and placing it in a new context. We're working with people on the edge of society, and we are bringing them the sacrament that will save and will heal. It is God who draws us forward. And in fact, if I was to say what gets me out of bed in the morning continues me in the missionary work that actually is at the heart of what Blessed is about, it is Christ revealed in his sacraments that would be my answer.
So there is no question that fresh expressions are to be Eucharistic. Father Simon helps us identify pioneer ministers for the Church of England. Father Damien here, who's now the Vice Principal of St. Stephen's House, Oxford, planted a fresh expression of church by celebrating the Eucharist with full vestments and Anglo-Catholic trimmings in the foyer of the UK equivalent of Walmart, and did it every Sunday for 3 years. You with the tannoy speaking the whole Eucharist to everybody in the supermarket, the bakery, the storeroom, the whole works, and literally grew a church by the proclamation of the word through the Eucharist. But normally, not because of churchmanship, because most of us haven't got Damien's balls, if you see what I mean. normally, a catechumenic community draws people in through initiation and develops an understanding and appetite for the Eucharist, which is then developed in an appropriate way. So I'm going to literally stop dead then, because I'm 5 minutes over when I meant to, and would like to take some questions for 10 minutes or so. Mm-hmm.
Are curious about who has 132 emails to answer. We do have 10 minutes for questions. There's a mic in the middle there, and I would invite you to go to the mic. If you don't get your question answered now, we will have more questions both tonight and tomorrow morning. Or you can grab Graham over coffee or some other time and ask your question. We only have 10 minutes.
If you go and form a queue at the mic, I'll...
Doug Vary, Westminster United Church in Weston. I like this talk about discipleship. I'd like to hear a little bit, though, about the benefits of discipleship. One thing that I say in my sermons from time to time, if your Christian faith is not providing you benefits every day, what's the point?
I don't think I know any greater benefit than participation in Christ and his kingdom, to grow into a person, to be like him, to see that engaged with everyday life, and become yourself part of his very good news for your community. There's lots more, you could say, without getting into any sort of prosperity teaching. I think to be in relation to Christ is well-being, but I'll say just that. And talk to me some more if you need to.
I wonder if you could say a little bit about the tension when there's liturgical revision and this, you know, a focus on sacrament, and you have new people coming that are not baptized.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the tension of that? Because the whole question of open table and and that whole thing.
Yeah, I think we have to revisit the balance of all of that again. As we move out of our long-established sanctuaries where to which people are meant to come and know what they're meant to do, into either the context where more and more are coming who don't know what to do, or we are actually going to the Costas and the places like that and creating new communities. I have to be very careful. Now, please, you've heard my clear commitment to Eucharistic worship. I have to be very careful that the Eucharist does not become a members-only event that says, you're welcome, but you can't take part in the real thing. I think what I said about enabling people to take welcome stages toward Jesus at the time they're able is really helpful. And at Eucharist, that certainly at least means that the invitation to come forward and receive a prayer for a blessing is a wholehearted one and not, because it'd be a bit embarrassing if we didn't. One fresh expression I know, when they moved to a Eucharistic stage, decided that the nature of their community was that they would pass the elements to one another, and that the sort of New Age travelers, rave attenders, and people like that that they were getting now knew them sufficiently well enough that if they chose to take the elements, they were taking a step towards Jesus, and if they knew they weren't ready, they would pass them on. Now, good Church of England small print in the prayer book says communion is available to those confirmed or desirous of being confirmed. And I think we can interpret that missionally. But a culture of hospitality that draws people deeper and makes it clear that there are actions appropriate to levels of commitment, but is soaked in hospitality, I think, an invitation.
Stuart Pike from St. Luke's in Burlington. I've been hearing and appreciating the talk about context, and been very, very impressed about how these really interesting, fresh expressions have grown up in, you know, deeply embedded in their context. At the same time, I'm also conscious of the fact that many contexts are similar, and I'm wondering about the balance between innovating something that's happening, and how that works with maybe networking, but also making it contextual, and and how that balance happens between making it local, but also maybe sort of expropriating some of the wisdom.
That's a really, really good question. The most important thing about context is the actual people with whom you are dealing, and not to stereotype them or presume you understand them before you relate to them. And that's why we always say it is this listening, discerning, serving, relationship building exercise that is at the beginning. You may well discover that their actual context makes them similar to a whole variety of other people, and that's why certain almost franchise style fresh expressions are very appropriately around. It is why Messy Church has done so well in so many places. But if you talk to Lucy Moore, she will say you must do your local listening, because it will both affect how you do Messy Church and whether or not Messy Church is the most appropriate fresh expression. In I think it's Canterbury Diocese, for instance, in about 70 fresh expressions, Messy Church amounts for no more than 20%. And there are, I think, let me get this right, 17 different models in that diocese. So some fresh expressions will be for networks of common interest. Some will be for neighborhoods or community groups that we have not engaged with. And I think the nature of our culture at the moment is both an extraordinary homogeneity. You know, okay, I'm in Toronto, Starbucks everywhere here too. And an extraordinary diversity. and the reading of a context will take both seriously, and there, and it will then tell you what from other places you can draw on, and it won't leave you totally inventing the thing for yourself. But it is not safe. Drawing in other resources is not safe outside of that context of local listening. What about these people here? And are they as they seem superficially, or do I need to learn more deeply about them?
Terry DeForest, vision advocate for the Diocese of Niagara. I was struck by the number of times a fresh expression was taking place in a place where one might have assumed that, in fact, the secular sacred divide would have prevailed. Mm. So can you tell me a bit about the negotiating for the space in an Acosta or an Asda that has been kind of experienced, and how was that approach?
Well, thank you. I mean, you've just given me the examples where we have the best openings. It really, really does depend on the management and the view. A Baptist pastor, amazingly called Sid Latty. Think about coffees for a minute. God has a sense of humor. It's not quite Sid Latte, but it's spelt Latte. Created a form of cafe church in his local Costa that so impressed Costa that the charitable trust connected to Costa has sent out a message saying they would encourage cafe shops in any of their outlets. And they're the second biggest outlet across the country. So some recognition. I think almost all commercial firms look to be able to demonstrate they can add value to the community. And I guess it was on that basis. Asda in the UK, which is owned by Walmart, has chaplains. So some of these places, but I'll tell you how Damien got in. Damien got in because he was sent to be a priest in an area where practically nobody went to church, and there wasn't even a pub with a room they could meet in. The nearest place was the covered area at the supermarket, which used to close at 8, between the restaurant and the main supermarket. He got permission for his licensing by the bishop to be there. And the area manager came because the bishop was coming. The branch manager said to the area manager, just to suck up, wouldn't it be wonderful if something like this happened every week? You're on, said Damien, before anything else could happen. So sometimes it is the local opportunity. The sacred secular where I come from is very strange. People can get in trouble for wearing a cross at work, and yet people can patrol the streets of club nights working with the police called street pastors. And you just frankly never know which way it's going to turn. But at the moment we have opportunities, but that once again there's nothing that replaces local negotiation, good relationship and good reputation.
Thank you, Graham, for the talk, and thank you also for masterfully handling the questions.